Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 689. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
It's been an easy day. No commute equals an easier day, so I am not going to argue. And I think this podcast is going to be pretty easy, or at least I hope so. Main topic of conversation, All Out on Sunday night. This had a lot of newsworthy events. Do you want to start from the main event forward? I will admit, I did not catch the pre-show because of some Bleacher Report technicalities. But I did get this thing rolling for the main show.
Nothing really important on the pre-show. Well, I mean the team of Jurassic Express and Best Friends defeated the Hardy Family Office in a 10-man tag. And the important part, I guess, is after the match, there is a tease that we might be getting a Matt Hardy versus Orange Cassidy hair match sometime soon.
Ah, I suppose I did miss that because I did not go back to watch any highlights. I would say that Matt Hardy's probably losing his hair in that situation, but that is just me.
Yeah, I imagine he's looked at himself in the mirror once or twice and realized he finally realized he's fighting a losing battle.
Yes, I was not going to point that out. Oh boy. But yeah. Okay. So there's that. I did think that Miro and Eddie Kingston was a fun way to kick off the pay-per-view proper. Nothing too crazy to say about this match. Like, it was just a really well laid out match that came to a fairly obvious conclusion.
Yeah, this match was really good. I don't know if anyone really thought that Miro was in any danger of losing the title, but they did a really good job with it. I enjoyed the hell out of this match. It was everything you'd want in a match between these two. So yeah, two thumbs up for me.
So that was a nice way to start off the show. I will admit that there may have been some slandering of Satoshi Kojima on my part last week on this show. He had quite an enjoyable match with one Mr. Jon Moxley in this on this pay-per-view.
Yeah, I thought this one went a little long for me, but, you know, Kojima acquitted himself well. There was a showcase for Moxley, Moxley heading into his big homecoming and being confronted by one Mr. Minoru Suzuki, the first of a number of big surprises on this show. You could tell who travels and goes to these big AEW shows, because there not seemed to be a single person in that building who didn't know who Minoru Suzuki was. So that made it a special moment. And they essentially redid their confrontation from the 2020 Tokyo Dome show in front of an audience of a lot more people. Watching from home, not in the building, of course.
Oh, right. It was like you said, it was the first of many surprises, and that was a fun surprise, like, because I had not jumped online to check any news or really been scrolling around on Twitter, so I was more than happy to let some surprises hit me. I don't know if there was any word of him being around, but Jon Moxley, I mean, we've talked about the need for Jon Moxley to have other stuff to do. so that he's just not constantly going after the title. And AEW filled the roster in other ways later. I do not think that Suzuki is not a full-time hire. He is just over here for essentially a match, I'm assuming, if they're fighting in Cincinnati.
Suzuki is over here for 2 months. Not for AEW. That's for AEW. He is doing a full tour of the indies because he's going to be doing a number of NJPW Strong tapings for the US-based New Japan show that airs exclusively on New Japan World. He'll be doing big shows in, I believe, for them, Los Angeles, and I think one other city that I don't remember right now. I think it's Los Angeles and Philadelphia that they're doing.
Okay.
For that, and then he's got 4 matches for Game Changer Wrestling, and then pretty much any indie, if they wanted to pony up for the money for Suzuki, he's doing some interesting matches between September and October. It doesn't surprise me that AEW got him first.
Yeah, that seems like the biggest payday, I would assume. But if he's doing all kinds of indies, obviously not just about the payday. This is going to be a fun matchup for Moxley to have, and I would assume that this will be the main event of Dynamite on Wednesday. Like, I would be shocked if it weren't.
No, I'm sure it will be. I mean, Moxley's in this weird position now where I agree he was in the second match, then all out, but if he's not in the main event, then his entrance is basically the perfect way to kick off a show. I see them building to him, to Moxley's homecoming, and putting that in the main event spot. This will, in many ways, we'll get to it later. I mean, AEW has some real opportunities to maximize this momentum they have. We'll talk about more as we go on, but yeah.
Okie doke. Well, third up on the card here, we got Britt Baker defending her AEW Women's Championship against Chris Statlander. We had Jamie Hayter, Rebel, and Orange Cassidy all at ringside for their respective friends. There was some shenanigans involving the outside, but not a ton. And we ended up with another very good matchup, in my opinion. 3 for 3.
Yeah, this was definitely 3 for 3. A very, very good match for both women. Definitely a good opponent for Britt Baker. Statlander shined again. Obviously, we thought going in this was definitely not her time though. Britt Baker is in the middle of a major run that is I believe Paul White referred to it as needle moving in the video package, and he is not incorrect.
She's maybe, 3 months at most into her title reign?
Yeah.
And I would imagine that this thing is going to run the better part of a year before she drops the championship. So anyone challenging her right now, I'm just not going to buy too much is a real challenger. Could Chris Statlander do it in a few months? Yeah, I could see a redemption story somewhere down the line. But this one wasn't going to be it. But good match by both the ladies without too many shenanigans involved. Now, was it just me, or was there already some teasing about some dissension between Chavo Guerrero and Andrade El Idolo in his little backstage promo?
It seemed like there was. It seemed like Andrade did not appreciate Chavo intercepting with the line about about canceling flights or what have you. It's not a good fit. Andrade still does too much talking, and it's not like Chavo Guerrero was ever a great promo. So it's a weird fit. I could certainly see Andrade, with whatever influence he has, pushing AEW Creative to remove Chavo from this spot and put his future father-in-law in it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that we kind of made fun of WWE for having a surrogate for Andrade, but pretty much the same thing's happening in AEW right now. Even though he's cutting more of a promo in AEW, I think. Would you agree with that?
He's doing the bulk of the talking. So what is Chavo even doing there?
Okay. Yeah, that's it. They've kept his promos short, which is fine. But yeah, Chavo seems superfluous, and I guess to me, Ric Flair would seem superfluous too. Other than, the connection that everyone's gonna, of course, mention.
Andrade's going to be an interesting one to watch because he has been overshadowed many, many times over at this point, and his potentially breakout match with Pac didn't get to happen on the pay-per-view. It will happen on Rampage instead, but Andrade's going to have to, well, both creatively and Andrade with his performances. They're gonna have to turn their heat up on this because he has not he hasn't set the world on fire in this run yet in any way, shape, or form.
I mean, it's obviously at least a little bit easy right now to point to Miro as someone who did not find his footing initially when he came into the company. It'll be interesting to see. They do seem. I guess it's not really a bad thing that they try to shake up characters. But I also think that they maybe try to shake them up a little too quickly sometimes. Instead of staying the course. Now, I don't know if there's much to stay the course about. At least for this one, it's hard to blame Andrade for a. It seems like Pac has travel issues, and if I were AEW, I'd have a hard time planning for him moving forward if this is consistently going to be a problem. So
No, you're not wrong.
yeah, that one just seems kind of strange to me. But, it was kind of funny. This pay-per-view really moved along, and I mean, I'm not surprised that I'm seeing the first three matches really had about the same 11 to 14 minute time length. So that first hour really moved around pretty quickly, and then we got into some of the longer matches. It would have been kind of wild how they would have been able to fit that onto this card. Another match.
The Casino Battle Royale
Oh.
would have been on the pre-show.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Okie dokie, though. But to steer back to everything else going on in chronological order here, Young Bucks take on Penta and Rey Fénix for the AEW Tag Team Championships. I believe both of us were in agreeance that the Lucha Brothers would take home the championships, and sure enough, they did.
Yes, they did, and also it was a steel cage match as well. You forgot to mention that part.
Yes.
And I don't know if that was necessarily the best Young Bucks match I've ever seen, particularly Young Bucks complete Young Bucks style match I've ever seen. But if it's not, it's damn close. This was the definition of a perfect spot fest. Just the right time on the card, in the right moments, for the match that's gonna be the title change, just bust out everything in the world, do everything. Yeah, this was the time to do that match.
I think I mentioned something about these two teams bringing out the worst in each other. You can word it the way that you did, and you can also say that I'm just like, people kicking out of stuff that should not be kicked out of is kind of some craziness to me sometimes. But the matchup was a lot of fun. Like my enjoyment of the match was very high overall. But it is also one of those ones that I'm just gonna go, there's always something about that style match that's never gonna hit me completely the same as some other style matches. I guess I can just leave it at
That's fair.
that. But that was a huge moment though too. Like I feel like that was the first moment that crowd really got into things.
The crowd was dead throughout the early part of the show, but no, this was one of the key matches. They kept the first three matches relatively short. All good. Three for three, then four for four. But yeah, which again, the layout of this show for the first three out, what, first two, how 2 hours of it. Certainly. Well, once again, by the end, we're definitely gonna get this close. I'm sure we're gonna get this whole entire show high marks. But they were on a roll at this point. There was nothing bad or even questionable up to this point.
And they did do a nice job. Like I do always feel like they have more of a New Japan pacing to how they like to work shows rather than a WWE style. And they did build in a little bit. They didn't do a full intermission like New Japan does, but they did give us some highlights of the first set of matches. That gave everyone
They
a
did that, yeah.
little bit of a breather before moving into the women's casino battle royale. I think the big thing that's headlined by this was yet again a another surprise comes out, which. I do not feel like there was that much chatter about Ruby Soho coming to AEW, but we find ourselves with another strong woman wrestler in AEW now with Ruby Soho signing with them.
Yeah, no, this was really good. Although I got a bone to pick with you, Kevin, for not informing me that the song Ruby Soho came before the wrestler Ruby Soho.
Oh.
I embarrassed myself on Twitter. I was unfamiliar with the song.
Oh my! Well, I can't help you.
I don't know my Rancid. I apologize.
I'm not a big Rancid fan myself, and so Jeremy has a problem with me. But being that as it may, it was a given to me. Like, I guess I didn't say it because it's just like it's right there. I've lived in that world of music for a long time.
I know you have. I did not know that her name came from the song, and it's brilliant because, you know, everyone knows her as Ruby, and Ruby's a common name, and, you know, she can be, you know, she's, I guess, friends with the band, and they, you know, completely the blessing to for her to use that name so she can continue to be Ruby in the world of wrestling. So that's fantastic. And
yeah.
No, it was good to see her. The Battle Royal itself was probably better than most of these type of matches, especially the home stretch got when she entered got really hot towards the end. And, you know, she will be getting the AEW Women's Championship shot against Britt Baker very soon. I could see it on the New York show. I don't know if necessarily they'll wait to full gear for it, but
no.
Yeah, good match for it with her and Britt Baker. Interesting decision to go with her going for the title and, you know, most likely losing, you know, so soon. But she can go. She's definitely somebody who can go up and down the card and, you know, and regroup.
I wouldn't be too worried about a regroup if necessary. I like the, instead of the straight up battle royal, I did kind of like the, really wasn't completely Royal Rumble format because what they let in 5 to 6 women per card suit.
5 per cards.
Okay. And, I guess I like that style of Battle Royal. It kind of makes a little more sense. It lets some action breathe a little bit more because you usually don't have too many people in the ring. But you can get some chaos going on, too, when you need to.
The first period was clunky because, you know, obviously 5 is an odd number, and so one person's on and kind of doesn't know what to do when the other two pair off, when the other two pair off.
Right. Yeah, unless you have a chicken shit heel who just sits in the corner, or a road dog who just grabs the ropes and just lays there the whole match. It's kind of a weird spot to be in.
In the early part of the match, they did have, at least, especially in the first like probably two groups, there are quite a number of ladies who are fairly green. So it really picked up towards the home stretch and ended up very good.
Yes. Next up, Chris Jericho versus MJF. If MJF wins for the 4th straight time, Chris Jericho is banished to the announce desk. Thankfully, Chris Jericho is not going to be at the announce desk full time because honestly, Rampage is quite enough in my opinion. What is your opinion?
No. Rampage from an commentary position, from a commentary perspective, is very messy. Got Jericho yelling and screaming the whole time. You got Mark Henry basically, you know, learning on the job. In a show that's, you know, on primetime on TNT. Taz is great, of course, and Excalibur's fine as the host. But yeah, it can be a very chaotic booth at times.
Yes, it can be.
This was probably the downer of the show for me. The decision to have this match happen on Dynamite first obviously they've been in each other's orbit for, you know, about a year now. But this whole storyline of MJF wanting to be part of the Inner Circle, beating Jericho to get in the Inner Circle, all the drama while he was in the Inner Circle, breaking off from the Inner Circle, forming his own group, and, you know, doing this feud essentially in reverse by doing War Games first and then continuing the feud. The layers of Jericho was a lot of fun, but then the whole thing about the fifth labor being MJF himself and not exactly putting a very exciting stipulation on that, and then just having a normal match on Dynamite. The match was fine, once again, but none of their matches have ever been elevated beyond average or fine in my book. And having seen it so many times, this one, after everything we'd already seen, these two had nothing new to show us.
No. It like you said, like they haven't really. They had their big stipulation matches, as you pointed out, to start the feud. You know, it was War Games, and then did they do the Stampede match?
They did the Stadium Stampede, and they just kept going with the feud. Now, granted, everything, the golf shoots, obviously, FTR and Proud and Powerful is a really fun feud. Jake Hager versus Wardlow really is not as fun. And Jericho and MJF have just been going back and forth. Once again, the stuff with the labors of Jericho was a lot of fun, especially the stuff involving Nick Gage and Juventud Guerra. But then, you know, it petered out towards the end with the second to last one being Wardlow in a normal match just with MJF at ringside. And then, once again, the whole thing about MJF himself being the fifth labor when he's the goal Jericho's trying to accomplish. This whole thing would have been a lot better off if they'd found another wacky opponent for Jericho's last labor and then save the last Jericho MJF match for, and just not done a full length Jericho MJF match on AEW on Dynamite. A very WWE move to do a long match on TV to build up to a match on pay per view that people have already seen.
Yeah. It was a fine match, like you said. Like it wasn't. The match wasn't terrible, but there wasn't anything new. And I don't think you're gonna get that much new out of MJF and or Chris Jericho. Like MJF has a very staid style, and
He has no, as the kids say, bangers on his resume match-wise. He might want to change that if he wants to keep up in the new AEW. But he will continue to be in a good spot. I don't know what you do with Jericho after this. Honestly, I really don't know where to go with him.
Yeah, he's kind of. He's in kind of a weird spot. I mean, I guess you could have him and Malachi Black butt heads or something like that. But that's the only thing. That's the only one I can think of offhand. Because I guess I haven't seen word one way or the other. But is Cody just taking some paternity leave currently? Or is he going to be back sometime?
I think Cody should probably be back soon. But I think it's more he's filming for that Go Big Show deal on TBS.
Oh, okay.
He's the judge of. I think that's he's doing season two of that. Really weird time for him to take some time off. It'll be weird. Granted, he has his feud already laid out for him for when he returns. But beyond that, Cody's future is going to be interesting. I think he should turn. I'm thinking he should turn heel pretty quickly. Whether he joins up with the rest of his elite, his old elite brethren or not, you know, I think a heel turn would be very good for him at this juncture with what we've seen, as we're going to continue to talk about.
That could work out. Next up, we get the CM Punk return to the ring after 7 years off. He takes on Darby Allin. Your thoughts on the matchup?
I wasn't sure what to think about the matchup was going on, because I'm really not sure what I expected. Maybe it was a little overly critical of the early feeling out process, rest hold portion of the match. When you really realize it has been 7 years since the last time this guy has had a match, he did well. It was worthwhile, obviously. Pretty good match here. The people got their moment. This was what people came to see. It didn't close the show, because obviously they had some big plans at the end, but this ended up a fitting return for CM Punk.
Yeah, you definitely needed. I know that CM Punk might need to take on some people that are below Darby Allin's status, but they really needed to have him come in and beat a fairly big name just to kind of reestablish him as being as great as he was. Just because it had been so long, I think that was a necessary part of this angle. And Darby Allin has been one of the few guys that I felt like there was another moment where he lost a matchup and everyone's like, oh, well, that's it for, what was it when, did he drop the TNT title back to Cody Rhodes? Is that
no? He drafted the Miro. No. He drafted the Miro.
I felt like there was another moment where it looked like his push kind of was over, but maybe I'm thinking Orange Cassidy.
That's possibly thinking Orange Cassidy, yeah. But no. I mean, Darby's been linked with Sting since Sting showed up, and they've, that act has been featured prominently on episodes of Dynamite ever since. He's in a good spot. I do think eventually they are going to do for Darby a teacher versus student match where he actually wrestles Sting.
Oh, yeah.
That seems to be on the horizon. But yeah, no. Darby's fine. He loses nothing from losing to Punk in that scenario. And Punk, it'll be interesting to see what they do with him going forward. Judging by how the show ended, I could see him being derailed, into a feud situation. Not sure with who, but to keep him away from Kenny Omega for as long as possible.
yeah, I would think so. Just like you said, and we'll be getting to it rather quickly here, considering there was another buffer match, but that doesn't really need to be talked about. I would say with the way the show closed that CM Punk is going to be sidetracked and not in the big feud that seems to be brewing for the Elite here.
Yeah, no. The Bad Alliance were drawn at the end of the, let's get the QT Marshall match. I'm fine with that.
Okay, Paul White beat QT Marshall in short order. Thank you very much. So let's hit the main event.
Yeah.
I think that's enough, right? Yeah. Right.
I think that's plenty. I think it's plenty. That's exactly what QT Marshall says.
Kenny Omega defending the AEW World Championship against Christian Cage. Our good buddy Don Callis trying to wear an Almost Heart Foundation suit.
He has been rocking that pink shirt, that pink suit for weeks. He has worn nothing else, at least in the last month, I believe, on TV.
Yeah, he must have paid some good money for it because yeah, he has been wearing that an awful lot. Excuse me.
But yeah, no. But no. Omega and Christian, you know what? They had a very good match. Just a very good match on TV.
Oh.
But it was the last match of the night after a long show, after the people had already seen Punk and seen that tag title cage match, and many of those same people were at Rampage on Friday, they were at Dynamite on Wednesday. A number of them, I assume, went to some Game Changer wrestling shows throughout the weekend, so these people had seen a lot of wrestling. So, and by the end of the night, you could tell they weren't buying Christian as a viable challenger to Kenny Omega as far as actually having a chance to win the AEW title. That's just how I took it by the end of the night, yeah.
Well, there really wasn't any reason to take him seriously. Like, he hasn't really been buried in AEW, but he also hasn't been shot to the top.
No, this was a stopgap measure after Hangman Page. After some speculation as to whether it was the exact reason why this was happening, it has come to find out that yes, Page absolutely voluntarily requested this time off. And God bless him for putting his family first, but man, I don't know where he fits in the new AEW. That will be an interesting story to follow.
He took himself out of the plans at just the wrong time. We get a good match between Omega and Cage, and like you said, like, I definitely was dragging. The fact that I had the following day off is the only reason I stayed up to watch this thing, because I could... Jeremy was at a music concert, and he had me sending him results, and I couldn't believe that I was sending him the results to this match at like 12:10. I'm like, I am up entirely too late for professional wrestling right now.
Yeah, no.
They definitely use their 4-hour time limit on pay-per-view.
Yeah, they did, and SummerSlam 2 weeks earlier went four hours as well.
Oh,
actually, I think both shows, for the most part, utilized their time well and the shows flowed well. AEW,
yes.
Again, for me, the Jericho MJF match dragged, but once again, but obviously then you had Punk. You know, obviously it's what we're all kind of here for. They put the Puffer match in, and then this match. It was a good match. Kenny Omega wins, people are also waiting for this aftermath because they thought they knew what was going to happen, but they got a swerve first.
Christian gets beat down by, is it just Kenny Omega? I'm trying to think if everyone came down to ringside first as the beatdown happened.
I don't know if the Bucks were at ringside first. Because I think Jurassic Express ran in and got beat down before the Young Bucks hobbled down to the ring.
No, it would seem that everyone came down at the same time. So both of our memory is a little faulty. But yeah, Gallows, Anderson, Young Bucks come down to celebrate. Jurassic, they start beating down Christian. Jurassic Express tries to make the save, fail miserably. Did we even get the Elite Hunter, or did he just stay in the back?
I don't know what the hell. Elmer Fudd was doing. I mean, what the? Frankie Kazarian, my God. What are they even doing with this guy? Who did he piss off? just a complete failure of an Elite Hunter. But
so anyway,
the,
Yeah, so Frankie Kazarian does not come out, but Adam Cole, baby, comes out to a huge ovation and a huge pop. It looks like he's going to confront Kenny Omega, and then everyone becomes friends. And it really gets cemented with Adam Cole super kicking Jungle Boy right in the mush.
Yeah. Adam Cole versus Jungle Boy. Sign me up for that one. But yeah, no. Adam Cole joins the Elite. He was a Elite member in his day. They've always been. I don't think they ever really stopped being friends with the guy. So this was a good move. Once again, AEW needs singles heels. This group needs to be strengthened to some degree. And it was a good swerve because it made people, because for a split second, maybe you're thinking the show is actually going to go off the air with these individuals, you know, with their arms in the air, celebrating their victory, when some really, really terrible music hits.
Oh. Is that really terrible music? Isn't it orchestral music?
No, it starts with the Valkyrie song, and then it goes into some weird dance beat. Oh. I'm not even... You'll hear it tomorrow, obviously. But.
Yeah. The backup to the Ride of the Valkyries was the problem.
Yes. But people obviously react huge to Bryan Danielson either way. He shows up. He starts to clean house. The Christian and the Jurassic Express, make their comeback. And the fivesome of Bryan Danielson, Christian Cage, Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Marco Stunt stood tall to close the show. Marco Stunt was in the ring for this for one of the most, what might go down as one of the most important moments in modern wrestling history. Marco Stunt is in the middle of the ring for it. Good for him.
Yeah, Marco seems to find himself in the right place at the right time.
I mean, and obviously they have high hopes for Jurassic Express, in particular Jungle Boy, to link them up in this situation with Danielson. We have plenty of 4-man, 6-man, 8-man tag team matches that can come out of this. 10, 11, 12, who knows? They might need to add one or two more to their side, especially if Marco's not gonna put Marco in the ring for it. But yeah, no, a really, really good ending. Game changing ending, a needle moving ending. This is a moment we may very well go back to, and say, this is when something really big started.
Yeah, I guess it'll be kind of interesting moving forward. Like, now that both CM Punk and Bryan Danielson are in AEW, it's hard to say that they're still a threat to the WWE, but... they have enough names now that they definitely have more of a filled out card and more to play with.
They have an incredible roster. And once again, and they are going in the direction of, these smaller athletic guys. They know where their bread is buttered, and they're going to run with that. It'll be interesting to see. Now, something somebody brought up is that there are some really, really big Monday Night Football games this season, and that Raw could be in trouble. we could see sometimes where AEW gets better ratings than Raw. It's not inconceivable that it happens before the end of the year. It really isn't. When you factor in the whole money, how badly Money in Football hurts WWE, no matter what.
I mean, Raw has been going downhill for a while, and there's definitely been a reason why. And I mean, we joked about it, but there still hasn't been a solution. That the two big ads for the WWE were both to SmackDown recently, and yeah, Brock no, Lesnar
SmackDown,
and
SmackDown's the SmackDown. SmackDown's the A show. SmackDown's the show they're promoting the shit out of this week for as being a special episode.
Oh,
it's not SmackDown. When people talk, it bothers me when people talk about what WWE and they kind of forget about SmackDown and they treat Raw like it's all there is.
Oh yes,
AEW is definitely has a chance. Who knows? Once again, this could be the starting point for something for them to really grow. Whether they ever grow to the size of WWE or anything of that nature, time will tell. But as far as growth as a number two company, growth in popularity, growth in ratings, growth in revenue, they are in a good position right now. They have momentum, and you know. Dynamite tomorrow, who should probably be the biggest episode they've ever done, other than maybe the premiere. And then they can really build towards that New York show in 2 weeks. These are interesting times. This is a very important time in wrestling history, and we haven't felt anything like this in 20 years. Because fuck TNA.
Yeah, I mean, they never really panned out. As far as a viable contender goes, and I still, again, like you said, they still, the WWE still has a major network that their show is airing on and has much higher ratings than
two of them. they have two major networks. Yeah. So yeah. It's, I don't know about much higher at this point. It's, those Raw ratings have been,
oh no. I don't mean that. I just mean the SmackDown, isn't it like 2+, 2.25 or something like that?
Yes.
In that, yeah, okay.
SmackDown's still 2+ regularly, yeah. So, yeah, SmackDown is the A show right now, and it should continue to be. Raw needs help, but man, should they not hurt SmackDown in that draft in order to do it?
No.
So this is arguably the most interesting times we've had in wrestling in a very, very long time.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun. We have definitely done our dragging during the pandemic ourselves here with these no person shows. But now that people are back, things are getting pretty interesting. You know, you kind of wonder how long they had Bryan Danielson in the bag, and they really were just waiting for a crowd.
Yeah, I would say that he knew what he was doing very soon after his last match with Roman Reigns. I'm pretty sure. He may have played the field a little bit, but he knew, but he also, just wanted to take the summer off with it. You know, he wasn't going to debut in front of a Daily's Place crowd and take the summer to be with his family and then, sign the contract and, Well, actually, the contract was signed. It had been signed for quite a while. Did they beat him at the right time? No. I mean, AEW should be incredibly proud of themselves. This was a hell of a show.
I definitely saw a lot of people saying it was in the pantheon for best pay-per-view ever. I'm not good at trying to rate something like that, to be honest with you. Will say that it was as enjoyable of a pay-per-view as I have watched.
It was. It
you know,
was.
I'll definitely put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, good for them. It'll be fun. I mean, everyone's talked about there being, real competition for the WWE, and I think we're kind of there. You know, as much as, you know, obviously Paul White was on the show, he's not going to be the needle mover. You know?
No.
They need people who can still go in the ring. And I would think that CM Punk will do better as things move along. Not that he had a bad match necessarily, but if you wrestle more consistently, I'm going to assume that he's going to do it better as he has in the past. And, you throw in the likes of Malakai Black, who you can put in these feuds, and you got Kenny Omega, who hasn't really confronted any of these guys for the most part.
Kenny bailed from the ring so that there was no physical interaction between him and Brian. Yes.
Oh. Yeah, it was a smart thing too. You know, let that happen another time. I do feel like AEW has been pretty good in that department.
Yeah.
And being smart when people face off. I guess we can probably close there. No reason to talk about Raw, really.
No. I mean, it was a fine show this week, but nothing too exciting. No.
Okay, Jeremy and I might get to that when we record later this week. I will talk about Zaftig Brewing. I was rummaging around through my beer collection and trying to get out some maybe a little bit older stuff. I had this Zaftig Brewing Cashmere Indulgence Strawberry Milkshake IPA. It tastes like strawberries. It has that nice milk sugar content to it and sweetness to it. It is an excellent IPA. Excellent milkshake IPA if you like that kind of thing, if you like them a little bit on the sweeter side. And that is it. That is the bell time beer of the show. Have a shout at DeFrango11. That is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any of a number of fine purveyors, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Stitcher. Have a good night, grandkids.